All right, everyone. Welcome to Reliving the Extreme. Your host, Nate Maxson, here along with my brother, Aaron. And Mr. Chad Austin is here as well.
What up, peoples?
I apologize for no show last week. I was sick as fuck. Couldn't record when we were supposed to record. Now my wife's got it. I don't know if this is COVID or what, but I still feel like garbage, but I can at least talk today.
So. Yeah, she should have hosted the show then. That would have been something. What is your white Triple H? What was that? Her hacking?
But, yeah. I am the game.
Mrs. Maxina.
So what we talk about here before we start, we're going to talk about April 23rd, 1996 episode of ECW. There's not a ton to it, but we will discuss it. But before I know, this conversation will be a little dated because, again, we didn't record when we were supposed to. But I did want to ask about some of the recent passings in the world of professional wrestling. Some memories, some conversation. What about, we recently lost crotchety old Ole Anderson, who was always good for a fucking laugh, I'll tell you that.
well, let me tell you about Ole Anderson.
Like I was kind of saying, we were talking about Ken Patera, and I've used this line about people in real life. It's like, you can be an asshole as long as you're funny. Like, I don't care if you're an asshole if you make me laugh, but you can't just be an asshole and not have any humor to it. And that dude was fucking funny, and I enjoyed him. I enjoy it. And like, that's just talking when he did like shoot interviews and stuff. Like, he was undercover funny, I thought. And then, it was deadpan funny, you know, like honest funny type shit, kind of like Ken Patera. And I just, and also ring work wise, I always, like I said, growing up, I didn't, obviously I'm younger, but like, looking back and watching old stuff, and just I enjoy Ole in the ring, and
I don't think he was anything off the charts in the ring spectacular, which then again, he didn't have to be, and he wasn't meant to be.
He was believable.
I totally believable, but I only judge his merit of work based upon him booking.
Yeah,
that's what judge his career on.
And I think he's actually an underappreciated promo too, because when he's cutting a promo that he is invested in, he was a hell of a fucking promo too.
Remember how he tried to get Tim Horner over?
Yeah,
when he came out with that bat and everything, and dude, he was like, dude, I wouldn't want to be on the other end of that bat. Fuck, you know what I mean? Shit. Yeah, Ole was a fantastic booker, and he was a great businessman in a different sense. I'm not necessarily talking about money wise, but he saw something there in Georgia, and you know, not only time but the money just fell away from him, where he couldn't keep it going the way that it was, and that's a shame because I even think Georgia 84 was great. I love Georgia 84. I think it's a very underrated period in Georgia because it was on their last leg, and you know, and Ole was doing the best he could with Devil Blue.
Yeah,
for Christ's sake.
Well, and we were just talking about Sting before we went on the air, because as we're recording this, the AEW pay per view is on, and Sting's last match. I mean, you never say a wrestler's had a last match till they're dead, obviously, but. They're advertising it as Sting's last match. And I'll say this, for what anybody could say about WCW in 91, because there was a lot of bad. And the Black Scorpion thing didn't pan out well, and et cetera, et cetera. But one thing Ole, you can definitely tell Ole's hands were on in 91 in WCW, was booking Sting as an effective babyface.
Of course.
He did such a good job writing Sting. I mean, a lot of the shit in that company that year is garbage, but you cannot say that he did not book Sting perfectly in 1991.
He knows how to book a good babyface. I mean, and that's Ole. That's a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he knows how to book. I mean, like I said, from all goes all the way back to Georgia and, you know, some of the people that he pushed and, you know, but yeah, Sting was, I mean, you know, really anybody could have seen Sting was going to be a star, but yeah, Ole pushed him, you know, to the moon, man. That Black Scorpion thing, that didn't even kill him, I don't think.
Well, no, and I'm actually even like one of the better angles they did in that company in the early 90s was on that whole scenario during the Clash of Champions or whatever, where they're Sting's in the Horseman, and the entire thing of, you know, Flair kept calling us off. We were going to put the boots to you, and Flair, and you have one more chance, Sting, and et cetera. I mean, it was just good shit.
I wanted him to give up that I was going to bring that up. It's the best. It's one of the best one night angles they've ever, like anybody's ever done, where they wanted him to just give up the championship match and he wouldn't do it. And they told him he had 2 hours, and yeah, it was good shit. And it probably would have been a lot better if he hadn't fucked up his knee. Like, but
right.
I mean, that's why they had to pivot from that or whatever. Like, if Sting wouldn't have fucked up his knee, we would have probably never had the Black Scorpion. But anyway, it just, Ole was the man. And
I'm still mad about what he did with the tapes, though. All the Georgia tapes. You know that, right?
Was he one of the throw them out guys, or was he one of the tape over the shows guys?
He was one of the burning them.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, I've heard a couple of different stories, but they all end the same way. He was making room in his garage for like a boat. And he had all these boxes of tapes from Georgia and stuff. And instead of doing anything with them, I've heard that he just threw them away. And I heard a trash guy found them. At some point, and that's why we have some of the stuff that we have. And then I heard that he burnt them, but either way, he didn't look at keeping old tapes the way we do. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, that's textbook Ole, I guess. Ah, fuck them.
Yeah, make room for a speedboat.
Yeah, one of the other guys. There's actually in threes this week, but. And I know, not on the level of Ole Anderson, of course, but the guy had hustle. You got to give him credit. He's probably asking St. Peter for $20 right now to take a selfie with him. Virgil, Mike Jones passed away as well.
Mike Jones passed away too?
Virgil did, yeah.
Oh,
he'll not the Mike not Jones the rapper, Mike, not the rapper Mike Jones.
Oh. Oh,
but
you go. You might want to go first because, dude, my Virgil stories—they run right up there with the Iron Sheik stuff.
I watched Virgil, and Nate was there. I watched Virgil walk away from his table. A guy tried to get a picture with him, and Virgil took a picture with the guy, but Virgil used his phone and charged the guy like $29, and the guy didn't even realize that it wasn't even his phone that got the like. It wasn't his phone that the picture got taken with.
Dude, I believe it. I've seen other people do it too.
Might be one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
And I mean, I know. Sometimes we have because we have a tad bit of an age gap between myself and Chad and Aaron. So sometimes there are things that maybe, like for Chad, he wasn't as young a fan as we were then, so it wouldn't have popped. Or you know what I mean? For me. When 12-year-old Nate popped big time when Virgil told the Million Dollar Man to go fuck himself. Like, I know some people would say, you know, it is what it is. When I was 12 years old, I thought that shit was cool. I liked that Virgil told the Million Dollar Man to go fuck himself. I mean, it was probably the most effective Virgil ever was, obviously, because he was wrestling Ted DiBiase. They had him with Roddy Piper to talk for him. They did everything they could.
You ain't kidding, dude.
To make him look as good as possible. And, you know, it was, but they did it perfectly. I mean, his babyface turn on DiBiase in that 6 months was probably the best he ever was. But I enjoyed it as a kid.
In the ring, it was the best he ever was. But yeah,
have you ever seen that commercial for that spray called Poof?
Poof?
Where you can spray it on anything and it totally kills the odor and it has no like chemicals in it, and the dude even drinks it. Like, you never seen that commercial?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, it has at the end of the commercial, it has what they consider a drawing or a cartoon of a pile of poop. And it talks about they sprayed the other spray on top of that poop, and it says, "I smell like poop and flowers now." And Virgil was the poop. But DiBiase was the poof. They tried to spray him on there. And dude, it was still a tough thing, but they got him over. I mean, he got to run a Piper, correct? I mean, seriously. Yeah. And I've seen him pull the Iron Sheik before at Walmarts, where he just walked in at a random Walmart and asked for a table. He was there for an autograph signing.
Or he would do autograph signings and advertise that Ted DiBiase was going to be with him, and then be like, "Oh, Ted can't come. Ted was never going to be there."
That's if he did it the right way, and he did it like, and he tried to be legal about it. But I've literally seen him just walk into a Walmart and just ask for a table. He was there for an autograph signing, and who the hell at Walmart knows who, what the fuck's doing what? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they don't know. Because I was there. I was at the place when he did it. And I was just like, this guy, I helped the Iron Sheik do it. So I knew what he was doing. Dude, that's fucked up, man. But yeah, he was a gimmick. You know, he had a good run. I never really had a chance to see a whole lot of him as Soul Train Jones before, but I have seen some like later on. And it's not only is there not much to really go by, most of it was him in a tag team with somebody else doing the talking anyway.
Right.
So it was pretty hard. It was pretty hard to shit on his work then, because he really didn't have to do anything. He had somebody with him. But yeah, terrible worker, but dude, he's a hustler.
Yep. Most definitely. And then last but not least, probably the guy I know the least, I've seen the least of, just because I haven't ever gone out of my way to watch a lot of his stuff.
Oh, no.
So pretty much my big memory of him is his wedding.
Oh.
Paul Butcher Vachon. Also, I've watched so much more of Mad Dog than I have of the Butcher. I don't know. I just haven't seen a lot of Butcher.
Well, Butcher wasn't, how do you say this? Like, he wasn't around as much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he, you know, he did the whole family thing a lot. So he didn't travel as much as Mad Dog did. And he worked a lot of the shittier territories up in Canada, the smaller ones that nobody saw, nobody knew about, that kind of stuff. And really, most of us, I mean, even for the most part of me, was when he was just doing jobs in the WWF. No,
right,
and the wedding thing, but yeah, he was kind of a big deal for in my lifetime a little while, like in the old AWA territories, and having the last name Vachon. I mean, look what it did for Luna, for Christ's sake!
Right. And was he's the one that was Luna's dad, right?
Adopted dad.
Okay, yeah, I thought so, but yeah, like I said, I'm not knocking the guy at all. I just haven't seen enough of him in my viewing of older wrestling to really have an opinion on. I mean, he looked like he had an effective heel, you know, effective heel look. You know, he's a big ugly fuck.
Yeah, the Butcher, Paul the Butcher Vachon. Hey, wasn't he the one that had his leg taken off by Jerry Lawler?
That was Mad Dog.
Yeah, that was Mad Dog.
Oh, too bad. He was still around. Damn. Yeah, he was basically, you know, he was like the lesser of the Vachons, but yeah, he was still a draw, just for not as long. And there's not a whole lot to go by about him, because he wasn't a good worker, and he looked apart.
And I gotta say, there are some funny ass moments during his wedding on TNT. Albano just walking around belching into the microphone. Dr. D. David Schultz being as entertaining as fucking hell. It's the epitome of Vince's vision of cartoony wrestling, but it's still funny as shit to watch.
Of course.
You know that fucking reception There was no script to that thing. They just let those fuckers party. I mean, let's be honest. They just let them party and clown, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, I could totally see a producer just telling them about 2 minutes before they walked into the reception. Look, there's nothing to do. Just you guys know how to be you.
Eventually, we're going to throw this fucking cake around.
Pretty much. It's a cake, dude. It's got to be thrown around.
Yeah. And then Lord Alfred Hayes trying to just exist in that environment is funny, too.
Yeah, Lord Alfred Hayes is, trying though, to exist, period.
In real life aspect, though, that camera wasn't there. Lord Alfred would have been right there with him, man.
Lord Alfred.
Everything I heard about that guy, fucking love booze and women.
He's another guy that I don't have enough footage of too. I saw some stuff in a magazine where he was working in Florida, and either he was teaming with the Sheik or managing the Sheik, and I was like, dude, I got to see some Lord Alfred Hayes stuff. There ain't a lot of him out there either.
Most of the stuff that I've seen of him pre WWF is, when he was in Mid Atlantic. I've seen some of that stuff, and then just like a promo here and there.
I liked him as a heel manager.
Right on.
He had Billy Robinson, and he called him the system because you just can't beat the system or whatever. Like, that was cool shit. I liked his delivery as a heel manager. I think he could have done more as a heel in WWE or WWF at the time, but it just wasn't in the cards for it. But
no,
they just had too many managers, but. Because, I mean, if you listen to some of them old Coliseum videos with him and Sean Mooney, like, he heals it up a little bit on those, you know, but.
Yes. Yeah, well, good guy, dude.
Well, now we'll get into the meat of the matter. Our ECW TV review for this week, we're reviewing the episode of ECW Hardcore TV from April the 23rd, 1996. The matches were taped April 20th, 96 at the Hostile City Showdown. They got it on the first try that time. Mm-hmm. They opened the show with a good visual. Joey Styles outside the ECW arena with the ECW crowd waiting to get in.
The unwashed masses.
Yes, the unwashed masses waiting to get in to the ECW arena. To see the show, which is effective hype for maybe somebody that is thinking on the fence about coming to the next show to see all those fans try, or maybe you don't want to come. Maybe you don't want to hang out.
Maybe it was ineffective because they were like, we should go to ECW. And they were like, oh no.
Yeah. We might get stabbed.
Yeah. You see all them walkers out there wearing the black shirts, just yelling ECW. Jesus. Yeah, I can see not bringing a girlfriend there. I wonder if anybody's ever met a girl there. Besides one of the boys, you know, the broader girl. I wonder if anybody's ever hooked up with a wife or anybody there.
It's like meeting your wife at the seediest bar you can possibly meet her at.
That is the seediest bar you can possibly ever meet her at. Because they serve beer and drugs there.
It's like fucking a carny.
Pretty much. Yeah, this was like no recap at all from anything at the beginning of the show. Like, yeah, it went right into fucking Dreamer, and I only wrote I hate Dreamer.
Yeah, they showed us all the stuff we've already seen between Tommy Dreamer and Raven. And then
the love story of Beulah and Dreamer, which they leave out the fact that he pile drove her like 47 times and fat changed her when she was a kid.
Hey, you know, you had to beat the bitch into shape. I guess. I don't know. She didn't fight back after the 47 pile driver, did she?
Storytelling of convenience there.
And they're still together.
Then we see Joey Styles in ring, and he is going to interview the Gangstas as they come to the ring. And Jack cuts the promo. He talks about the last time they were in the ECW arena, that was the first time he ever got his ass kicked. Essentially alluding to the fact that the Gangstas have gone soft. I think he said his wife said that he got soft.
Dude, that's saying something from a black guy to say that shit. A black guy like New Jack saying that shit, dude, that's saying something. New Jack was great here, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Putting over the fact that essentially what he's saying is we're the most hardcore motherfuckers, and with these eliminators, we've met our match.
Yep, that's exactly what he was saying. But it didn't take too long for the eliminators to fucking respond, did it?
Not at all.
There wasn't even a camera on the aisle or anything. They just slid right in out of nowhere.
Yeah, here they come. It was, and I like that because they kind of did the same thing last week too. I like getting over the fact that with these two teams, it can just erupt at any time. It's good shit, pal.
Yeah, you know, at a bus stop or whatever they said before, all the weird places that you would only expect the Gangsters to be hanging out at anyway. A bus stop, a laundromat, Roscoe's unemployment
chicken,
office.
Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles.
Yeah, pretty much. It was good though, man. The Eliminators are that's a pretty solid feud, man. As far as getting away with murder, as far as doing anything in the ring. Because you know what it's all built to, right? Like one spot somehow. Crazy. You guys could do that. The Maxons against the Gangsters. Love to see that one.
It's like the whole, would you fight Mike Tyson for $1 million? Yeah, because he's just going to knock me out with one punch anyway. Once I wake up, I'll be rich.
But can you enjoy your $1 million and you're shitting on yourself because you're stuck in a wheelchair?
Yeah. Shit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, good.
I don't have $1 million.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Hawkins or whatever. He went to the island. He had a good time.
Right. I could totally do that. Fucking get shit. I get shit on now for nothing.
Aaron, what did you think of this Gangsta's Eliminator segment here?
It was effective, and like you said, it was New Jack admitting for the first time, you know, that they might have met their match, but they need to come back and double up their intensity and all that other shit. So I think it was good, and I missed the fact when wrestlers would just run in, you know, like you don't have to hit the music every time, and like it wasn't caught on camera that these guys are running out, you know, that type of shit. It's just good stuff, and it's telling a really good story. It's like the Raven, Dreamer, and these guys are the two main angles right now, you know, and Raven and Dreamer has like all these peaks and valleys to it, and like, you know, they're telling this like intricate story. This is just a fucking wrestling angle. These two teams don't like each other, and they're just attacking each other every time they're in a building together, and one of them thinks they're tougher than the other one, and that's all it is. It's just it's violent and everything, but it's a simple told wrestling story.
Yeah, but look at the actual premise of the story. The story is for tag team supremacy in a division. That's what it's over. You know, they took something as tiny as the actual profession of the wrestling business, and they just went completely the other way with it and just added all the personal shit and made it a great angle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all they really wanted, was to be the best. You know what I mean? That's all the angle was originally supposed to be about. Then it got personal.
And of course the locker room empties to come break these two teams up, and the fans boo, of course, because they want them to let them keep on fighting, which they're going to here in just a few. Because the next match is El Porto Ricaño versus our first appearance in ECW of Supernova. Simon Dean.
Mike Bucci.
Mike Bucci.
Mike Bucci. Everything I heard, a lot of people didn't like the guy, especially like when he got to the WWE. Like they even had him like in charge of OVW or whatever. I think it was still OVW at that time. I don't think he ever had anything to do with World Championship Wrestling. But I don't know the guy, obviously, but I always heard he was just kind of like a Terry Taylor, where he just kind of got on people's nerves for whatever reason. But I mean, in the ring, I think he was really good.
Funny, my Mike Bucci story. You know what he does now? He's a bank manager. How do I know that? Before she worked for the bank that she works for now, my wife actually worked for like a corporate-owned bank chain. And she had went to some conference, you know, they have like their corporate conference or whatever. And she's like, there was some guy there that gave a presentation, and he's one of the managers at, I think, in one of the Texas branches or something. And he was talking about how he used to be a pro wrestler for the WWE. And she's like, his name was, I don't know, Mike Bunchy or Batchy or some shit. And I'm just like, Mike Bucci, fucking Simon Dean is a bank manager. All right. And then I looked it up on LinkedIn, and sure enough, he's a manager for that bank chain now. So
you gotta go somewhere.
I'm just glad that I got to know him before any of that. Like when he was just starting out, like in the indies, when he first started doing Nova, and I was already done ECW, but I was doing independence that he was on. And you know, we weren't like friends, but you know, we talked. We there was definitely a mutual respect about wrestling. You know, we could talk about that kind of stuff, but yeah, I always kind of pictured him to being somewhat of a Terry Taylor of a stooge kind of guy. But I mean, the deranged Power Ranger line was great though.
Yeah.
Cause he did look, you know, what would he think? Paul had to see that, right? The ECW crowd.
I actually wrote this down because there are some times in ECW history, because there's been some before now, and there's going to be some in the future, where Paul lets somebody go out on his show with some sort of a gimmick that you know that crowd is going to shit all over. And my thing is always, does he do that on purpose?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you without a doubt. I can tell you without a doubt, 100%, yeah. I can't remember some of the kids' names, but I remember when we had some of the jobbers. I think maybe it was the Young Dragons or whatever, Mikey and Paul Laurier or whatever. But when they put the gimmick on, I remember Paul like laughing, like not laughing like at like kind of at them, but laughing when he saw
like,
them.
Oh, so, they're gonna eat you up. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, but he knew there was probably something there, right? Like eating them up is good, right? That's reaction.
Like we haven't got there obviously yet, but like when you get to like Barely Illegal and they have the 6-man Japanese match, that guy showed up, he looked like fucking, he dressed up like Peter Pan, you know, when he put that outfit on, Paul Heyman was like, oh, yeah, this is gonna be great.
Of course.
This young man is going to be Sunday dinner for this crowd.
Which that speaks volume about how great Paul is. He would know either way. It's not costing him anything. It's not even costing him any creative out of his own mind. He just saw the guy, let the guy go out there, you know what I mean? This is what you want to do. If the crowd likes it, we'll run with it. If they don't, you know, we can still run with it, or we can just not bring it back. You know what I mean?
Or it's almost like we'll bring you back because they like shitting on you. You know what I mean? Like,
if they didn't care at all.
Oh yeah, like, I'm just saying. Like somebody looks goofy. It's like, hey, they ate you up out there. We'll bring you back next month because they're gonna want to do it again.
And you don't have to push them.
Yeah.
Right. He ain't got to win.
Right. Well, for what they do for a couple of minutes here, Supernova and Puerto Ricano, you know, they have a nice little match. And then here we go with the Eliminators back out, calling out the Gangstas. And the Gangstas out again.
They censored what Perry said. They said, I know what he said, but they censored what Perry said. I don't know if the original tape did it or if the network did it, but
what he
Perry
say?
Basically said he said he wanted the gangsters to come back out there so they could beat the fucking black off him, and they cut that shit out. But
somebody cut it out. I don't even think it's offensive. I don't even think it's borderline anything wrong. But no. I could still see it had to get cut out.
Yeah, if I'm a betting man, I'm betting WWE scrubbed that because I don't think at this time ECW would have scrubbed that, to be honest with you. They probably just left it in.
No. If I go back and find a tape, I bet he said it. Yeah, they didn't bleep over it. Especially the home video. No. That ain't happening. But Bad Crew was there.
Yeah, yeah, they get laid waste too by the Sandman.
Not before they put out El Puerto Rico or the Puerto Rican, and he took a fucking crazy ass bump out of the ring, man.
But I couldn't take my eyes off the Bad Crew.
What's what I'm saying? Bad Crew's the one that threw him out of the ring. It's the only time Bad Crew did anything that the ECW crowd actually reacted fondly to.
Besides leaving. Bad Crew. Too bad it wasn't Damian Kane out there, too.
I think I said Sandman. It wasn't Sandman. It was Hack Myers.
It was D-Von.
Oh, yeah, it was D-Von. D-Von.
No, D-Von beat up the public. But no, Nate's right. Hack Myers beat up Bad Crew, and then D-Von beat up JT Smith.
I think the reason that I said Sandman, it's stupid, but I think the reason I said Sandman is on my notes. I wrote down Hack, but I didn't put the C, so I think I read Hack like Hack the Sandman. But anyway, yeah, Hack Myers laid waste to the Bad Crew.
Oh, that tells you about where your push is going.
Not the door.
They all rode together, probably. I wasn't there to drive Hack, so I don't know how he got there.
And then we get a segment with JT Smith and Little Guido at a restaurant getting cheesesteaks.
Geno's, man. Not just a restaurant, stupid. It's fucking world famous Geno's in South Philly. I know you've had to hear about it before.
I think I probably have.
You had to have. I mean, it's like it's been in Seinfeld. It's been in It's Always Sunny. It's, you know, it's been talked about like Diners, Drives In and Dies. Like everybody's done something. Even back when Eddie Gilbert was booking, I'm sure they mentioned in Geno's or did something at Geno's before.
Now, was that the place he went to when he was doing the King of Memphis thing?
Yeah. It was. I mean, it's like it's that famous. Like it really is. Like it's like worldwide, and I don't know initially how it became famous. Maybe because I think it's one of the oldest, like cheesesteak places or carryout places, like in Philadelphia, which it means it's pretty fucking old. But you know what I mean? Maybe that's how it got so popular. But yeah, it's a dump. It's a carryout. Like if you want to sit outside, you got to sit outside on picnic tables. There is no inside.
And I think the gist of this is from what I got anyway, was Guido's temper. JT wants Guido to stop being so negative and curb his temper, and it was a complete waste of time, pretty much.
Hey, I mean, it was a good way to just do something with them, and you know, and they still got Philly over, and that's still their home crowd, man. That's what I'm telling you. You guys don't know that place is famous. Like Rocky Burns is famous.
If I would have been Guido, I would have been like, I'll drop my attitude when you become literate.
Oh, come on. ECW wasn't around that long. Jesus, that wasn't
no, I thought this. I thought this segment was dumb.
See, that's the kind of stuff that I actually like. I like that band.
I like JT and Guido and everything. I just thought this segment really didn't do anything for me.
I mean, it didn't further anything, you know, clearly. And I don't think it was meant to be. I think it was just meant to give JT and Guido a little TV time and see if they had any chemistry. Something along that effect, I'm guessing. But I didn't mind it.
They do have chemistry. They're fun together.
Guido's cool.
Yeah.
And like I said, I like both guys. I think JT's funny, and I think little Guido's awesome, and I like them together and everything. But this segment just kind of, I don't know. I don't know if it was because I just saw these guys get like the shit kicked out of them. Like I've already seen them on the show and now it's this or whatever. I don't know. But to me, it didn't fit into the show, I don't think.
Oh, I can totally see where you think that.
Yeah, maybe position this at the beginning of the show before they get their asses handed to them.
Or the Pulp Fiction. Save it for the end of the show.
Could have been a Pulp Fiction section.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the next thing on the show is Joey Styles is selling the fact that later on Shane Douglas is going to quote-unquote reveal the truth to Raven because the Kimona secret is essentially the gist here, which we will be getting to that.
Dude, this storyline has gone so fucking on so fucking long that I legitimately am. I don't know about you, but I mean, and we were doing this show once a week, so we're watching it pretty much in the same time that it was airing as far as a weekly thing. I'm really starting to get confused as to who's fucking what. You know what I mean? Who's going out with who? You know what I'm saying? It's really starting to get like so diluted with just people, and they're just making the storyline. I don't know. It has to be just me because I'm more of a wrestling related storyline angle than this, you know, Maury Povich shit.
Well, that's what this is. What, you know, this is essentially the part, the Raven, most of the Raven Dreamer stuff is a lot of like kind of what you were alluding to there, Chad. It's a lot of, that's where Paulie in ECW leaned into the whole Jerry Springer aspect of society in the mid 90s. And he's trying to capitalize on that. And it worked, but I agree with you. Some weeks it's good. Like some weeks it's Memphis, and then other weeks it's Jerry Springer.
That's got a lot to do with Raven, I'm telling you. And I knew Raven pretty good. I was close to him for a while, but that was Raven not having to do anything. Just let everybody else do everything. And I'll just sit there and, you know, and we'll just further our story by letting everybody else do stuff. I just know Scotty too good to even pretend like that's not what his idea was. Because a normal promoter or a normal booker would have already somehow found a way to fuck this angle up and blow off Dreamer and Raven, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely.
They would have never brought in, like, you would never got the Dudleys. You would have never gotten any people that Raven, like, ended up bringing into the quote-unquote business, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that Raven's lazy. He just didn't want to do anything. Man, that's not even a shoot. That's not even a knock on Scotty. He's pretty fucking brilliant. I can produce this big ass angle and get all this heat and let it go on for this much time, and I ain't gonna do nothing. He doesn't. and he lays down most of the time when he's in the ring.
Yeah.
That's even lazier. But Kimona's gonna spill the beans.
Yes, and after Joey hypes that, we get a match that I don't take a lot of notes on shit like this. It's Dreamer versus Brian Lee, and it just happened. I don't have a lot of notes on it. I think kind of like when these guys are in there, I don't know why, but it's like almost like I just zone out and I'm not really watching, but I'm watching. Everybody's got a black shirt on. They're just romping around the arena. You know, I don't know.
It's a walking brawl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, it also reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld when was it Jerry was on the stage and Newman and they had or Kramer had the butter and the parsley and the flour all over them, and they just ended up just fighting on stage, like right through Jerry's set. And the guys from NBC said, "I just love that kind of stuff. The way you had these two guys just come walking on fighting. Isn't that what Dreamer, what Brian Lee and all that shit is? They just start brawling.
Yeah.
There's no match. There's no introductions. They just all of a sudden the fight breaks out. That locker room should have been a TV show.
Somehow there's a referee.
Yeah.
And
somebody's music hits. That's what I'm starting to think. Maybe they should have just did the whole entire show in reverse and made the locker room the TV show. That's where everything starts.
Plus, what were these guys going to do? You know what I mean? People aren't paying money to watch these guys have a fucking wrestling match.
They want to watch for yourself, dude. I'd pay good money to see these two goofs try to go out there and do Liger and Malenko or something like that. While Pegasus against Liger. Yeah, I'd pay great money to see any of that.
Yeah. This Saturday at the ECW Arena, Tommy Dreamer and Brian Lee catch as catch can.
Yeah.
An Iron Man match.
It sounds like catch as much ass as you can. That's all they're going to be doing is playing grab ass. Fucking sad. And how is, I mean, besides the few bumps like the Dreamer takes, like, and I know they're a little bigger on the spectrum. The cinder block spot's stupid. That doesn't bother. That doesn't hurt or anything like that. But I mean, dude, how is he so broken up? Like as a human being in real life, you know, he's always falling through tables. You know, that breaks your fall. Like you can make a case for everything that he's done. It really isn't that hardcore. A cookie sheet. You know what I mean? Watch that poor sap the other night that was in Australia that I sent you that tape of taking that spot on the big ass needles. Let me see Dreamer do that shit.
He is, and I know we dump on Dreamer a lot, but I really don't know. Other than just being the home promotion guy. He's one of those anomalies where there's really no logical explanation for why he was as over as he was. You know?
No, there's a complete explanation for it. It's babyface 101. It just isn't a guy that I would get behind. But then again, like I said, I'm older. I was older then.
And as a face, it's much like Hogan in the 80s in the WWF. If you actually watch it, he's actually the heel. Like Aaron said, he didn't like Beulah when she was fat. He fucking pile drives women and fuck. He's not even really a good baby face because he's a fucking prick. He's an asshole. He's really a heel, to be honest with you.
Well, it is ECW.
True, true, very true. Good point.
That's about the only way I can defend that, Yeah, I mean, all that shit's accurate, but it also has to go back to, like, the shit that he's been dealt with. If you look at it from the way he's not just going out there and pile driving women for no reason whatsoever, you know? And this stupid storyline with Raven and Beulah in the summer camp, you know, that goes back way before wrestling, so to speak, if you want to actually count that as an angle or some shit. But, yeah, he's just had enough. And he's out there just beating up women. I can applaud that.
Did you guys notice
that's that, actually, you know what? You know what, Chad? That would have actually made Dreamer more over with me. If he would have just come out there right before he started doing all that shit and been like, I've had enough,
man. You just start beating up broads.
Like when Farley pulls his hair up and fucking Tommy Boy, you know, and he's like, I want to run the car into a goddamn bridge abutment. If he would have done that, he might have got over with me.
Or he would have got a pop out of the boys. It would have got a pop out of the boys for watching Dreamer do that to his hair. knowing that it's pretty much being held together by that spray stuff that you know, you can't even put water through. That's what's keeping his hair together. Flex Seal. That's what Tommy uses for hairspray.
Did you guys notice that they had, and when they were like brawling up by the Eagle's Nest, did you notice they had those two chicks out there that they were like screaming for Tommy?
Yeah, Mary Kate and Bella.
And I was like, they're plants.
They're every month.
Like, and at first I was like, I think they're plants, and I wasn't sure. And then all the shit happens, and then like a guy comes and like escorts them away. I'm like, yeah. They're trying to get Tommy over as like this good looking baby face. It's like, come on.
Well, Mary Kate and Bella were just fans way back in the day. Like if you knew them, you would actually watch them grow up on ECW television when they used to be there when they were like 13 and 14 years old and whatever. And I think one of them got into the business, and I don't think they were rats, so to speak, that I don't remember them sleeping with too many people other than like Shane and that kind of, you know, regular people that you would expect them to sleep with, but they somehow got into the business. Yeah. But they're longtime fans, Mary Kate and Bella. She's the only person that I know that has that Tom McGee match. If you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
She's got it.
So the match between Dreamer and, because we kind of got away from it, because much like my brain when I watch them wrestle, I get away from it too. The Bruise Brothers, of course, get involved. They put a cinder block on Tommy's nuts, hit it with a chair, and Brian Lee wins the match.
I can't believe that's the finish. Like, the referee still counted three. It's wrestling got that far out of control. Well, it wasn't even a match.
Yeah, it really wasn't. I mean, there wasn't, I don't know, it wasn't structured as a match. It was structured as a fight. It was structured as an altercation. But that's ECW. It's it's the mind of Paulie, you know. It's just, it's so frantic. Like, one match is something like this where it isn't even structured like a match, and somehow there's a referee there, but he's not, essentially, he doesn't even need to fucking be there. And then the next match, you'll have a match with rules.
I think I'm gonna hire me a referee and just have a referee follow me around every place that I go to, like a bar or something, just in case something happens and a match just breaks out. Get him an old ECW referee shirt. Yeah, why not? That's what ECW does.
The easiest job in wrestling is being an ECW referee.
In front of the camera. Not, don't say that behind the camera. Because they're grunts behind the camera. They're the ones that are driving to the airport, picking up guys, and going.
I know. I know that. I'm just saying, like, if it was like whatever, it's like, well, what do you do for a living? It's like, well, I just watch these guys
to beat each other up.
Drive each other through.
Just left Foot Locker at my day job, and I have the best seat in the house for a wrestling match. That's pretty much referee's job in ECW. I'd love those guys though, Mulino and all them dudes.
Finnegan, yeah.
Even the rock and roll guy, even the Zumhoff ref. Who's that? The guy that came from Florida.
I don't remember his name, but I know when you said Zumhoff guy, I knew what you meant, who you're talking about, but I cannot remember his name.
He had the wristbands up on his forearms or whatever. He had Under Armour before Under Armour was a company. what are you looking him up? What are you typing in?
I was trying to, but
ECW jobber.
Like, I can see him in my brain, but I can't pull his name out of there.
Hey, it looks like Tom Pritchard. With a ref shirt on. With his goofy hair. Job guy. Job guy ref. The center block spot, though, that's a great spot, but that whole ball thing, Dude, I don't know how Dreamer did the whole I had kids angle anyway, after all them ball spots.
That guy was always getting his dick and balls fucked up in ECW.
Why can't he be impotent, Tommy Dreamer?
And then Lawler actually fucked him up.
Yeah, but that was probably on purpose. Lawler probably wanted to bang Mary Kate and Bella.
Ooh, I think they're probably too old.
Yeah, maybe when they were 13 or 14.
He would have known him.
I love the people on the outside. Or I don't want to get off on a tangent, but I was thinking about it the other day because people that aren't wrestling people that know that I love wrestling, all they want to talk to me about is what they see on the news. So this whole Vince McMahon thing just keeps everybody fucking asks me about it that isn't a wrestling fan. What about the Vince McMahon thing? And I want to say to him, hey, look, we have had big stars in wrestling. You know, Jerry Lawler's a pedophile. Jake Roberts is a fucking drug abuser and wife abuser and child abandoner. Believe me, we elevate really shitty human beings to hero status in the wrestling community. Let's just Jimmy put it Smith that way.
Killed a lady.
Yeah. We as wrestling fans have a big history of. Turns out Bret Hart like was a fucking terrible father and shit. If you read his ex-wife's book, it's like we elevate really trashy people to hero status in wrestling. So just don't even try to wrap your brain around it.
Yeah, pretty much, man. I mean, there's not a, and the ones that are good, nobody you don't really give a fuck about.
Yeah. Real nice guy, that SD Jones.
Yeah. Luthez. Say Luthez. Don't say SD Jones. I'm sure that closet door fucking swang open.
Yeah, Luthez probably beat his wife too.
Well, back then it was socially acceptable.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Back then it was fine. She was probably loaded up on antidepressants and he smacked her around.
That stupid drink that they outlawed back in the day, that syrup that you said with codeine in it, that all them old bags were smoking the cigarettes that had the big long filters.
Fuck, Dick Murdoch's a card-carrying member of the Ku Klux Klan. We really do. We elevate some real big fucking pieces of trash to hero status in wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it so great. Like I said, nobody gives a shit about the nice guy.
Yeah, not in the wrestling business.
I went out and purposely got like, some DWIs.
That's why. That's another thing famous. And I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that what's happening to Vince he doesn't deserve. He does. But that's one of the things that gets to me about the guys that like want to clutch their fucking pearls about Vince and act like Vince is the most evil person to ever exist in the entire world of pro wrestling. And I'm just like, can we look in the fucking mirror here and examine all of the people that we look at as our heroes that are real garbage human beings? I'm just saying.
People, it's another thing too, is like, guys knew about what was going on and nothing happened with it. You know what I mean?
That's because they were doing it too.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, even like the worst of the worst, like, people knew what fucking Grizzly Smith was doing. But he always had a job and they always had him around, you know? Like, I just watched just the other, like, a little bit ago, I watched a thing. It was like an old, old interview, but they were interviewing Greg Gagne and they asked him about Buck Zumoff, and he said that, like, guys kind of had a feeling about what he was doing, you know what I mean? But his point
why could
was,
he drove the van?
His point was, he said, like, who are you going to tell? Like, it's a he said, she said thing. But either way,
why do you think Lawler got off? There's not a single long term, and believe me, I'm not trying to disparage the king at all, but everybody knew what was going on. Everybody knew the places. mm-hmm. you know, where it was going on. The people that live around that area knew the women that were involved, and what, you know, it just was what it was. And I mean, I'm sure I've probably taken advantage of some girls because of my prestige of being the Western States Heritage Intercontinental Hardcore Cruiserweight Champion and 1988's best bowler. I'm sure I've taken liberties at brawls before. Wasn't well, as many as Lawler, I'm sure.
I hate to try to wrap our show up quickly. I hate to do that to you guys, but I'm starting to get to that point where my throat is hurting and I can't talk as much as I could when we started.
It's pretty much over anyway.
Yeah, we get to the last segment here. It's the beginning of the Shane Douglas Raven match for the ECW World Championship, but we don't get to see the match.
Sorry, I know. There's one thing that we missed, and it was Lance Wright's Hype Central, and his line about Mean Gene. Do you remember that?
No, what was the line? I missed it.
He was like doing his Hype Central, and like you can buy the video and the ECW hotline, and he's going through his whole thing, and he's like, Mean Gene's got nothing on me. Well, except a messed up liver. I didn't hear that. He said, Mean Gene's got nothing on me. Well, except maybe a messed up liver.
A more messed up liver. A bigger bank account. Probably. Well,
but yeah. Anyway. Essentially, like I said, we get to the beginning of the Douglas Raven match that we don't see. We don't see the match on this episode, but we get a Douglas promo, and it turns out, you know, the whole reveal is that Beulah was cheating on both Tommy and Raven, and she was cheating with Kimona. Oh, she wasn't pregnant, by the way. And she was cheating with Kimona. And like Chad said, this is all very convoluted. And you're just sitting there going, what in the fuck is going on? Can we just have our world title match?
And Kimona's gone. Like, not too much longer, right? She can't be there much longer. Like, this angle, clearly this has to be writing her off at some point anyway. You know? But yeah,
I think she's gone shortly after the Kimona dances atop the ECW arena deal.
Probably. Because what was because of the power outage, right? That wasn't part of an angle.
Right, yeah.
I thought that was because the ring broke.
I think it's because of a power outage, because wasn't it, but didn't they have a spotlight on her or something? Like when she was on the Eagle's Nest? Because the power went out there all the time. So you can make a case for the ring breaking, because the power went out all the time. Like, I mean, literally, it would go out 2 and 3 times on a show at a regular basis. So you can make a case for the ring breaking because it was, you know, a shitty ring or whatever. But Kimona wasn't around. Yeah, I mean, everybody knows who Kimona was. She was just a local stripper. No wrestling ties. All she had was Raven.
And the... Essentially, my because what they do is they do the whole angle there thing, and then they say, you know, to be continued next week on ECW, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's about to get extreme on the screen. And what I wrote down for my rating for this week's episode was I wrote down it was almost a dud, because other than the Eliminators and Gangstas stuff, this episode was useless to me. If I never saw it, it wouldn't have mattered.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this before, I mean, you just gave your rating, but if you were, I mean, what was their demographic? 14 to 30 or whatever it was, somewhere in that ballpark, right?
Right, right.
If you were watching that ECW show and you were kind of a fan and you saw Kimona and Beulah and all this shit going on and they're kissing and stripping. Of course you would cut it off and say, stay tuned for next week. I'd be right there. I mean, you know, I'm speaking, you know, I'm definitely, you know, behind, you know, revision. But, dude, I'd totally be like, hell yeah, I'm going to see how this goes.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. 14-year-old me would have been like, I've got to see this show next week.
Kimona, I want to lay you. I could do without I could do without Beulah because I never got her anyway. I never got either one of them, honestly. But it, but apparently Kimona Warlay was easier than Beulah.
So Chad, I give it
a C. Mm-hmm. Not a whole lot captivated me in this show at all. Not really. Like, to me, it was average from the beginning pretty much to the end. Just average.
Aaron?
I feel the same way. I just think it's like the Eliminators and Gangsta stuff was cool. I didn't mind the little bit of the Nova Puerto Rican match we got, but just everything else Puerto Rican. Kind of, whatever.
And I mean, I'm not, and this is by no means shitting on it. Every single episode of every single wrestling show can't set the world on fire, you know? So, but the, like I said, this episode to me was pretty forgetful other than the Eliminators Gangsta stuff. So guys, as we prepare to sign off here for this week, any parting words for our listeners?
Thanks for listening.
I just know that it's at some point something major is going to happen, and I'm starting to smell it now, with the Eliminators and the Gangsters, you know, and I'm starting to see stuff that I'm like, okay, they have to be, I don't know what the next big show is, but I can see that the footprints, the blueprints are already been laid for something.
Aaron.
Like I said, it was a kind of a lackluster show, but our show is a lackluster. So keep listening and tell your friends and tell your wives.
Tell them where to find us at, Aaron.
Yeah.
Tell them where.
Nate knows all that stuff.
Well, you can listen to the show anywhere. Obviously, if you're listening, you know this. You can listen to it anywhere that you can find your podcast, Spotify, Apple, et cetera, et cetera. Tell your friends about Reliving the Extreme if they are old school wrestling fans.
And for $25, you can just message me and I'll come on and do a show with you.
There you go.
Sure, why not?
And if there is a place where if it is an app like Spotify or Apple where you can give us a rating or a review, give us a 5-star rating and a good review, what that does is that helps us in the algorithms when people search for example pro wrestling podcasts. It brings us up in the algorithm so that more people will find the show, because I really do think we do a great fucking show here. It's very entertaining. And I just want to take a really quick moment to, because I want to plug a friend's show because he plugs us on his show and I really enjoy it. We always get mad props on his show from Dave Dynasty on his This Is Extreme podcast, where he's doing a different thing than we are. We're doing the week-to-week show reviews, and what Dave's doing is he's going and finding people that were there. Like, shit, he had fucking Maddie in the house. Talk to him. He talked to Radico. He had an interview with him about the early days of producing ECW, and he's had a lot of great guests. So like I said, he's doing interviews with the people that were there.
And I'd love to be on. I'd love to be a guest on his show, but I think I've been on so many other shows. I don't know if he's going to find anything that he could talk to me about.
Well, that being said, thank you, Chad. Thank you, Aaron. I'm going to sign off here and give my throat a rest. Oh, shit. I sound like Kimona want to lay you now. But have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you next time around.
Go Stinger.
The Extreme.
Go Stinger. The night Nate danced atop the ECW.